the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here in the studio today with Mott, Steve, and Ashley. Welcome, everyone.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Good to be
here.
We are fresh off of Memorial Day weekend, a whole 3 days. Mm-hmm. I think everyone usually gets 3 days.
I got four.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're so
family
awesome.
Family in town took another day.
Oh. Yeah. That's good. That's good. I think I had four, too, because Friday I just sat at my desk and didn't do anything. No, just kidding, bosses. Just kidding, people. But no, it's good. I think we recognize that Memorial Day is kind of the front end of summer. Really, June 21st is, but let's not mince words. So people start feeling like they're heading into summer on Memorial Day weekend. It's when everyone goes and like just kind of gets their lawn chairs dusted off and starts, you know, cleaning up the barbecue and getting things out. Except for me, because I don't have a barbecue.
Well, except for people who live in Colorado, it's more like July the 4th when it gets warm.
Right.
So that's maybe the first day of summer here.
Right. Which is a little disingenuous, because Mott earlier was praising the rain that we had this weekend, which was the duration of pretty much the entire weekend. Bummer.
I like rain.
But Mott likes rain. So that's good. Well, on today's show, we're going to be hearing in our culture segment from the band Everlife. You'll want to get to know them if you do not know them already from their stints just all around and about, I guess, on Disney. And they've toured with Miley Cyrus and who knows who else. Mm-hmm. So a great group of girls. So make sure you catch that. And then for the inbox today, Ashley and I will be sitting down and previewing, giving you a sneak peek at the Girl's Guide to Marrying Well. Which basically means you just sit around and, I don't know, create doilies and wring your hands or whatever.
Yeah,
exactly.
Go get doilies that say boundless.
Wait, exactly. So make sure you're filling up all of those, what do they call those? Those
hope chests.
Yeah, mm. Hope chests. So,
or as my parents referred to it, my hopeless chest.
Aww. Exactly. Aww. So we'll be delving into that further on. But another thing that we women need to do is learn how to hostess. And so in our roundtable today, we're going to talk about hosting parties, basically, whether they're themed parties or whether they are just summer parties as you're all dusting off the barbecues and doing stuff. But we're adding the guys because, quite frankly, guys need to start hosting too. And single women unite in all the things that we host and the guys don't. So, and there are going to be a few guys out there that now that write to us and are like, I host parties. We're not talking to you. We're talking to the 98% of you that don't. So anyway, let's go around just quickly and talk about parties that we have hosted. I'm excited. I have a plan for this summer because I just went out and bought a new dining room table. Mm-hmm. And one of my criteria as I... Criteria? Okay, I couldn't remember one of... Oh, yeah, my plural. Grammar lesson. one of my criteria was that it was able to seat 8.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I can now have a good group of people over. So as I haggled that price and figured out what I was buying, there you have it. So I think one thing I'm going to do is just start going through the roster of my Sunday school class and just by first name inviting people, and you just have to get to know the people that are there, regardless of whether you like them or not.
Did you host a party for Memorial Day yesterday?
I didn't. I actually went hiking.
Oh, okay.
I went out and about. So.
That's right.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't even have a barbecue yet. I don't know how to work one, so I might buy one and try to learn it. We'll see.
And you need a barbecue that can feed 8.
Right. Exactly. And I need to get over my many aversions towards meat or many problems that I have with it. So, but I love grilled meat.
Or just grill asparagus.
Right. I mean, yeah, I like grilled meat, but I just need to learn how to grill it. So I'm going to work on that. But let's talk about some other parties. Mott, I know you hosted one recently.
I did. We hosted a Lost finale party almost 2 weeks ago. Don't laugh. It was fun. It's a great way to get to know people because you know if you're a Lost fan, you just Lost fans come together somehow. You get to know people like in your church who are Lost fans, and
instead of talking about the sermon,
it's a great communing point.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. And I think hosted that more than my wife did. It was a theme party. I printed off Dharma labels for water and for cola, and Dharma Initiative logos were about the house, and people appreciated it. They actually took them home as souvenirs.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we had about 10 people over.
Okay.
So how does that work when you throw a a TV party? Do you talk during commercials?
That's a great question. It was our first, and we didn't know how we would do it. But we first had to arrange all the chairs so that everybody could have a good viewing point. And we have a pretty big TV, so that wasn't a problem. And we have a DVR, so that helps with the commercials. And so what we would do is we had a little conversation on the front end about Lost and favorite characters and such. And we would let every third commercial run so that people could go get snacks or go to the bathroom, but we would fast forward the previous two commercials. And it seemed to work out really, really well. Everybody had a great time.
So unlike a Super Bowl party, people were actually paying attention and engaged in...
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have any talkers? Try to talk through the...
No talkers. We thought that might be a problem, but I said shh on occasion. So that helped.
That's pretty good. Now, were these folks that you knew well or folks that you were trying to get to know better and using Lost as your connection?
Well, both. Mm-hmm. We invited people that we knew well, and they invited people that we didn't know well, that they knew well. So we got to know them well. Mm-hmm. It worked out really well.
That's a very good plan.
This is turning into a Dr. Seuss.
That's really fun. How about you, Steve?
Well, yeah, I was thinking back how right after college, I was still living in the area where I'd gone to college and still living with some people who were wrapping up their senior year. And I think that was when we threw probably the most invested party I've ever been involved in. I mean, it seems like everything since then's been just a shadow of what that one was. And we had seen, I think it was in a University of Alabama yearbook, something about a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde party, where on the front end, everybody dresses up. You have caviar. You have a really nice spread of high-end food. You play these really classy, high-end games. You have classical music playing. And then after that portion of the party, we shifted gears, came over to my apartment, which was next door, and everybody changed into togas. We had Doritos and played less classical music and did things like sliding down the stairs in our togas and off-the-wall stuff. And I know it wasn't anything like the party that was in the University of Alabama yearbook, because that one had inebriating factors involved. But it was still quite fun, and we've never quite done anything like that since then. But it's encouraged Candace and I to be a little more creative, to add some personality, and especially anything you can do that gives everybody a chance to be in the spotlight. Games that you do that give people who are introverted especially an opportunity to present a side of themselves that would surprise other people. And especially to give us a sense of making sure that everybody who takes the time to come to a party really feels like they had a good time, that they were able to engage with people and make good connections. And so that's something that we've really tried to stay on top of and make sure that we structure things in such a way everybody gets to feel included and, like I said, be in the spotlight a little bit.
Lisa, I've been sitting here racking my brain to think of the last time I hosted a party, and I cannot remember.
Shame.
I know. I think part of it has to do with, and I am making excuses, with my living situation. I live in a basement of one of my old professor's houses, and it's a nicely fully, you know, finished basement, but there's not really a kitchen or an oven or a place to serve dinner. And so I use that as an excuse not to have people over, not to host, except for on Saturdays when we have our small group, the Truth Project. And last Saturday, I did something that, looking back, I'm pretty ashamed of and was kind of tacky as a hostess. I baked a pie and realized that I had left the ironing board out in the middle of the basement living room. And I thought, oh, well, this makes for a great, you know, serving area. So I just plopped the pie down the ironing board, set the plates beside it and say, hey, guys, you know, here you go, and start cutting the pie. Looking back, I'm just thinking, man, what if my guests think of that, you know? So I think this...
Only the best.
Only the best, yeah. And it doesn't help that there are college friends and they don't really care. But Brian and I have been to a lot of dinner parties recently. We haven't thrown any of those. We've been to a lot of them. And whenever we leave on the way back home, we just kind of talk about, oh, this is what we really liked, or this is something that I don't think we would do. But it's been a neat season of observing how people who are older and have their homes established, how they host and how they demonstrate hospitality. And so, you know, we're doing the wedding registry, and in doing that, we're shifting our thinking from, okay, this is just us day to day, to we really want to have an open home, a hospitable home, and what things do we need to entertain, or not need, but what things would we like to be able to entertain and to serve? So I think that's kind of where I am as far as the party hosting thing. Not so much hosting, but observing and trying to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's interesting because I can't think of, you know, you get criticism from both sides, from singles who say, really, the married couples in our church don't really invite us over, or mm-hmm. don't really seem to do things. And then the excuses are always, well, you know, we have all these kids, or we're busy with this, or we're helping out with XYZ ministries. But I think it's an encouragement for those of us, you know, in our audience who are younger and possibly single, to step up to the plate and say, I mean, I think there's that perception that that is something that you don't start doing until you're married or until you have a home or something like that. So I think it's great that you're doing the Truth Project at your place. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, who cares if there's an ironing board out there? I mean, as far as that goes, I found myself, I really like hosting parties. I like having people over, and I like doing, I'm an overachiever when it comes to party hosting. Mm-hmm. And I've done a lot of themed parties. I remember when the movie End of the Spear came out, I had a themed party in my backyard, and I showed the documentary that precedes it called Beyond the Gates of Splendor, and projected it in my backyard and did a whole Ecuadorian theme. So I had a baby swimming pool filled with water with like waters with flowers floating in it, and I had these tiki torches up all over the place, and wow. made a whole Ecuadorian menu and had people bring different things, and it was really a lot of fun. And then we were able to watch the film and then discuss it. And just, you know, had some like fun facts about the country and about the missionaries, Jim Elliot and crew and all of them. So it was good. But now as I think of doing things, my thing is, you know, I can pull off the big bashes, but the stuff that I would like to do of just, you know, hey, how about throwing something in a crock pot and having people over on Sunday afternoon? For some reason, that's just overwhelming to me, because I'm like, did I clean my bathroom? And I just can't even like pull myself together week to week in order to do spontaneous things. And it's a bummer. So I don't know. I mean, what have you guys had experiences where you've been at people's houses and you just remember, wow, I didn't even care that that wasn't clean or whatever, but we still had a great time.
No, I do care. No, I think it is crazy when you go somewhere and just the basic things haven't been taken care of, because, you know, it is all part of the experience. And, you know, you like that someone's taking the time to clean the toilet, you know. Mm-hmm. But no, it is something where I think there is that balance between how much you feel like, I mean, Ashley was talking about getting the things they need to entertain, and then also people who really pour themselves into, I think especially of like birthday parties that parents do for kids, that sometimes the what gets put into it versus what's gotten out of it, there's a big gap in the middle, and that it is easy to get to the place where you feel like you have to put more into preparing for something than you really need to make it meaningful. And in fact, what Candace and I often deal with is that almost like the Mary Martha story, mm-hmm. that we feel like we're putting so much into it, but we're not really stopping and being in the moment and enjoying the relationships and the connections with the people that are there, which was what it's all about. I mean, you can get so worried about, you know, do we have the right dishes for this course, or do we have the, you know, everything in place for this element of it, that you forget, shoot, I didn't have one meaningful conversation the whole time. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we've really tried to do more, to be prepared on the front end, but keep it simple enough that we make sure we have time for the face-to-face conversations that really make it worth the effort in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, my sister is the exact opposite of that. And I like, you know, my sister's not someone that I would set up like as Emily Post or anything, but she is the type of person who has people over all the time. And she's never really prepared. I mean, she's not someone who takes note of her house and what's going on and what she has. I mean, I've gone over to her place after church on a Sunday where she's invited people who are new visitors, people she just met in the hall. And we show up and she's like, oh, I don't even have anything to eat. And then it's and then it's like she sends her husband out to like get something, like take out or to go get sandwiches or something like that. But it's like so casual, and it's like everyone feels welcome, mm-hmm. and they feel like it was more of a priority to take the time, have you here, get to know you, than to worry about, you know, do I have all the right dishes? Do I have, you know, I mean, now granted, she probably could maybe make a run through once in a while and check things a little better. But I always appreciate that about her, because I always try to just get everything down to a science. And I don't know if any of you have any ideas of just things you've done in the past or places that you've been where really someone has thrown together something fast, or even like ideas for putting something together fast, or just ways that, that our listenership can maximize getting to know people through hospitality over the summer.
I would say never have an excuse. For those that really feel like they need to have a clean home to invite somebody over, prepare. Like if you want to do that on Sunday afternoon, clean your house Saturday night, you know, put something in the crock pot for Sunday. Just because we're called to be hospitable. And if you're the kind of person like your sister that really doesn't require a clean home to or food in the fridge to invite people over, that's fine too. I think you just need to be hospitable. You need to be in community. You need to invite people over. You need to get to know people. So just don't allow yourself to have an excuse. Mm-hmm. If you're very particular, you just need to plan better. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say.
On the same note, I think something that I've enjoyed is whenever Brian and I have dinner with Candace and Steve, Candace kind of says up front, hey, come over at 5 and we'll cook together. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I immediately go to work chopping something or helping her with salad, and that puts me at ease. That's something that I can help with, but at the same time, I feel welcome. We're having conversation. And I think that's a great thing to do for couples with families, for people who maybe they don't have a lot of time on the front end to prepare dinner, but make an evening of it, doing it together.
Right.
Yeah, that is good.
You know, too, we've noticed it's so important. It always feels like it's worth the effort to create a setting for people where they really can make the meaningful connections we've talked about, but also just the sense of being able to go somewhere where you don't feel like you have to be spending money in order to have a good time. I mean, you think about the spaces most of us end up going, the movies, the restaurants, the coffee shops, and there's always that sense of I'm on somebody else's, you know, I'm in somebody else's spot, and they need to turn this table over, and I need to be buying something if I feel like, you know, in order to be here, to be able to go somewhere where you really can relax and you really have this sense of it's not a money-driven entertainment experience, and you really can have that comfortable setting. And that's something that it's always worth the effort to host something like that and to give people that opportunity to let their hair down and let relationships naturally grow. And so that's something we've always felt like at the end of the night, for whatever sacrifices we made for it, it was worth it for that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so appreciated by single people, just because there are very few things that I go to, whether it's at church or functions with different groups of people, where I'm not having to cook something for 8 to 12 people. And like for a single person, I mean, you know, if you go to a potluck and you're a family of 6 or 8 or whatever, and you're bringing like a main dish or something, or you're bringing like a casserole or whatever, you know, that's cool. You'd probably be making that casserole anyway. But I'm always like my coworkers are just like, Lisa, that's all you do is like make food. Because I'm always like, yeah, I need to go home tonight and make a salad, and I have to make 2 pies for this or whatever. And then I'm just always trying to unload them on people, you know, because I'm not going to bring 2 pies home. So it's just kind of unwieldy a little bit. So I think it's fun to be able to, you know, host and then in turn, you know, be able to go out and about and be with other people as well. So, but I think that's good. I think for me, I've gotten great freedom in the learning to shut the door thing. Like I used to have this, my junk drawer is organized. And so I feel like when I have people over, like they should just be able to browse through my whole house and just do whatever they want. They don't need to. I'm going to shut my bedroom door because I'm just going to toss stuff in there, you know? So I don't have to like clean it and have all my floors mopped and everything. So I think I'm going to do that this summer, and also come up, as Steve alluded to, with like a few of my crock pot recipes and just rotate them. Mm-hmm. And people are going to get the same 3 things. And that is it, because that gourmet cooking is not my forte. I just follow recipes. So, well, that's good. We would love you guys out there to write to us with your ideas of parties you've been to, parties you've thrown, ways that they can be improved, ways that young adults can get out there and not only host well, but be good guests, and just ideas for how we can kind of get into community a little bit more and a little bit better without, as we've said, spending a lot of money, going out, having to do some huge thing, especially in our economy and just as things are going now. So, and keeping in mind people who don't have jobs currently, which is another situation I'm in with friendships. So write to us, editor@boundless.org, and give us your ideas, and maybe we'll chew over them in the near future. So we want to hear from you.
I was willing to give this baby all of my attention, but given the circumstances, I would never get one. Thank you. No. I've given a thousand choices, but you just take advantage. You show me your love and then give away all our chances. I don't want this. No. How could you forget how? Holding on to say goodbye, I tremble and say, baby, it's CLS. Oh, yeah. I just need to see if everything was fine. But I found out you didn't want me on your mind. Loving for you is the game.
All right, I am in the studio with this week's culture segment, and I have by phone the girls from Everlife, Amber, Sarah, and Julia. Hello, girls.
Hi there.
Is it okay if I call you girls, or do I need to call you ladies or something else?
No, girls is fine.
Okay, ladies sounds kind of seedy. I don't think I'm going to go there. So, well, they are joining us from their home in Nashville, which is where all just music artists seem to hover, at least the ones we talk to. So that's exciting. Although you guys are originally from Pennsylvania, right?
Yep, we are.
From right outside of Pittsburgh.
Okay. So not you didn't like just jump off of an Amish farm or something?
Well,
Totally did. We did the whole make our own butter and stuff.
No, we
actually did have it.
We did that. We were actually homeschooled because we did live out in the country. We were 20 minutes away from Amish country, but an hour outside the city. And
they make the best beef jerky.
They really do.
Ever.
Are you serious?
Turkey jerky.
Anyway. Oh my goodness! Because I'm all about the beef jerky. I love it.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's really, really good. But we've lived here in Nashville for 6 years, but we grew up in Pennsylvania.
Okay, wow. Yeah, I usually one or two days out of the month, I try to go on a low-carb diet, and then after a day, I fall off of it. But then
That's awesome. But then
every month around the same time, I start it up again. So
yeah.
I might have to find out your beef jerky source and get into that.
Well, at least you're consistent.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So I have one day a month of sticking to it, and then I just go off the fall off the wagon. So
I feel you. I'm right there with you.
Well, let's talk about what you guys are doing in music a little bit, because you guys have been around now for over 10 years. I think you guys kind of got the desire to do this around 97, right?
Yeah.
Okay, were you guys 5 years old then, or what? What was going on?
Pretty much. No, I wish. No, I was 13. This is Amber. Sarah was 11, and Julia was 8.
Okay.
And before that time, we were in drama and, any type of production with either a homeschool group or church or, any type of performance that there could be had, we were there. We were constantly trying to be involved with backstage or on stage. So that was kind of a normalcy to us by that point, but it was actually Julia's idea. She was we want to take, she's 8 years old, so this is what we say, she said. It was something along these lines of basically our parents were in youth ministry, and we saw them helping kids all the time, through life issues, and she's well, we like music, we like performing, why don't we try to do the same thing that mom and dad are doing, but with a band, and at first Sarah and Julia were yeah, let's do it, and I was a little hesitant because I was kind of shy, but it really just started that way. It seems so simple now that we look at it, but we started writing songs and singing and creating events in our hometowns for other artists to join in, but just so we'd have a place to play at that couldn't tell us no.
Okay, so you guys already played music at this point? Did you play instruments, or did you just decide this and then you're yeah, we better learn how to play something?
Well, that was kind of it. There was a little bit of piano for the girls there, and then Sarah and I were in public school for a while. We were in band and choir, and
I played saxophone, and Amber played clarinet.
Yeah.
I played the Lion King. Can you feel the
love tonight? Hey, woodwinds need to represent. I played the flute in school, so.
I always wanted to be a flute player because you guys had the lightest case to carry.
I know, totally. Well, then I moved to piccolo, so let me just tell you, it was nothing.
That's true. But yeah, like music was definitely a huge part of our lives, and our parents have an insane appreciation. They have absolutely no musical talent whatsoever. They can barely clap on beat, but they had an intense appreciation for like old rock and roll and kind of like the origins of just really good music. And so I think that combined, our powers combined, it really helped. And so once we started singing a cappella, just the three of us, and then I think after, a year, we picked up some instruments, a $50 starter guitar, beater drum set, and we honestly just kept trying to learn more and more. And we didn't really have a point in our heads, like, of somebody saying, hey, you can't do this, you're too young, or you're girls, or, you know.
Right. Right. So when you were starting out, kind of with those, with that first album, and I mean, obviously creating that first album, did you kind of define who you were then, or were you just like, we're just going to start writing some songs and see where it goes?
We're still defining who we are.
We're still figuring all that stuff out now.
Okay.
I think we always will. Like, we know more song-wise, situations that we've been through, things we want to write about and want to, portray more than we did when we were younger. But I think it's a constant state of defining yourself and trying to express that in a song, which is hard most times because you have 3 minutes.
Sure.
To try and express the lifetime of moments.
Yeah.
We're writing right now for the new record, and it's different than anything else we've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just because we're older now, you know, which is cool.
It's interesting because I know a lot of artists say that, your sophomore record would be the hardest record you'll ever write because you had your whole life to write your first one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strange because for the three of us, that role hasn't really applied because for each record, it's been like God's shifted us into this whole new period of life and given us a completely new, fresh outlook on, okay, this is what we want to say because we want to say it to ourselves. We want to encourage ourselves because we're losing our minds in this crazy industry, So that first record in 2004 that we released nationally was one of those, what is this music industry? Wait, what do you mean we have to, follow a song structure? And, we started writing with different people, and that basically started really defining who we were as Everlife.
Mm-hmm.
Everything up to that point just seemed kind of a lot of fun, you know?
Sure, yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this distinction about, who you guys are. There's kind of that identity, and you have a lot of a fan base from your history with Disney and all the folks you've done there. I mean, I know you guys opened for the Cheetah Girls, and you have, BFF with Miley Cyrus and all this kind of stuff. So you kind of have have those folks, and then you have, Ted Slater from Boundless, who's like, I just love Everlife. I love their music. And so it's kind of a weird, it feels like a little bipolar. Talk to us about your little, your identity and kind of how you're growing into this new one.
That's been the challenge this whole time, actually, that we'll just, our audience, we can never pinpoint a demographic, which really stinks for, as far as, thinking about marketing and sales and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People are always like, we're so confused, who's listening to music? And we're like, I don't know, everybody keeps coming up and saying they like it, so
mm-hmm.
been mainly a problem because we haven't been able to pinpoint it, but It's
really cool, though. We just played a show in Kansas this past weekend with, do you remember Loverboy, the 80s band?
Yeah.
Yeah, we played a show with
Working
them.
Working for the weekend.
And the guitar player, watched our set, and, he wrote some songs that he wanted to pitch to us, and it was really crazy. You would never think to pair us up with an act like that, but, it makes sense. We had some of their fans that were waiting around that came to see us, that, had on the 80s t-shirts and, they're still teenagers now, even though they have their own teenagers.
Oh, yeah.
And they would be I respect your music, you guys play and it's awesome. And then we would have the kids that just, come up and stare at you. They're oh, my gosh, I love your hair, And it's, and, every person in between.
Wow.
For us, that's a blessing.
So what's it?
I don't know why it's that way, honestly, but I mean, we're not going to deny it.
No,
and
totally.
Try and put it in a box because we've found over the years that we don't really fit in any of the boxes.
Sure.
Oh, thanks. But at the same time,
yeah, it can make it hard coming from a business standpoint because that isn't easy to market if you don't have a target demographic or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, we love our fans and we love hearing their stories, whether they're like 5 or like 60. You know, it's awesome.
Sure.
Like, so even, like, our first arena tour with Disney was with the Cheetah Girls, and it was basically all these like 5 to 8 to 10 year olds. Who had never even been to a concert before. They didn't even know the rules. They didn't even know they were allowed to scream and yell. And it's crazy. So as the opening act, we were kind of given the responsibility of like, okay, this is what you get to do at a concert, guys. And then we would have the biggest response from their either siblings or parents. So I think maybe it makes sense to say that we kind of are something for the whole family. That kind of sounds cheesy, but it worked. Yeah, indeed.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, and what's it like moving in those circles then? I mean, when you're dealing with folks, you know, very mainstream audiences that you would get off the Disney crowd, and then obviously, you know, being like you said, you know, all of a sudden you're here on the same stage with Loverboy. Do people kind of look at you and try to figure out who you are, or do some of these bands, can they even believe that girls like you exist?
No, sometimes it depends on what you wear.
Yeah,
that's totally true.
Which for you guys is always very modest and nice.
Yeah,
yeah.
We try. Sometimes it's not pleasing to everybody, but...
We have mini skirt Mondays.
No, no, we do not. It's a joke. No, and like, that's kind of always been, like, something that we've tried to be conscious of, but you can't please everybody. I think that's something we're starting to learn, is you can't please everybody. So I feel like if at the end of the day you can look at the Lord and say, is this cool with you? I follow what you're saying, you know, like, that's kind of, you know, nothing matters, but.
Sure.
But sometimes it's cool because we have, like, a song in our set, like, maybe one song, we say, like, this is our love song to God because he's the reason we're up here, he's the reason we're breathing, he's given us our purpose and our hope, and that's all we pretty much say. I mean, it's not like, we're not the band that kind of throws some scriptures down, and, you know, like, I don't know, we've always just written about our life experiences, and that's, like, we've tried to sing other stuff, and it just doesn't feel as genuine. And so afterward, we normally are finding, like, who's responding and who's kind of accepting, like, the music and the message and everything. And a lot of times the response is,
there's something really different about you guys. What is it?
And then that opens up an opportunity for us to, you know, talk about our faith and about our life. And I think that's normally where it's not necessarily, like,
sometimes people are just like, are you guys really sisters? Are you lying? I'm like, dude, what? Who lied about that?
Uh-huh.
Like, random.
Yeah. I don't know.
So what do you guys think about young women who may be, who may find themselves in the spotlight? I know we've been talking a lot around here lately about Carrie Prejean, Miss California, and just kind of her, the statement that she made on stage at the pageant. And Focus now has had her on the broadcast this week. And of course, now, you know, more controversy stirred up as a result of, you know, Donald Trump deciding to keep her as Miss California. Do you see any parallels between kind of yourselves there and her? I mean, maybe just being this, I wouldn't say unwilling, but kind of all of a sudden, you know, she finds herself saying, you know, I didn't really sign up for this, but I have to remain true to my convictions. Has that ever played out for you guys?
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what it is. So it's pretty crazy. Like, whenever, like, being an artist in general and putting, like, yourself on a platform like that, you automatically have to know that there's way more responsibility to, like, keep yourself accountable and the people around you accountable, because everyone really is watching. Mm-hmm. And it can make it really hard, like, just being honest, because you live your life where people, we say things and do things that are never going to be perfect, and it's never going to be exactly what everybody wants us to be like.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always times where you'll mess up in someone's eyes and another person doesn't think it's that bad, and it's like this constant struggle of being like, okay, these are my convictions, this is what I believe, this is what we're going to live by. You can't always live by what everyone else is saying, you know? And especially when it comes to scripture, it's like, this is what the Bible says about living right and wrong and what makes sense. And you live by that, and hopefully people respect you for it, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Do you have any, as you've been out on the road, any stories that really stick in your mind of either interactions with fans or just encounters that you had where you really felt God showed up, or just how, you know, what's life like when you're out and about or recording?
Yeah,
Well, when we first started working with Disney, they were very clear on, like, okay, you guys can't go out and be like, singing Jesus Loves You, you know, like, we can't, as a company, we can't show bias toward any one religion. We have to include everyone. I was like, I understand that coming from where you are, like, in a public eye. I was like, but we're not going to change what we believe. We don't shift that way. Like, we are who we are. If you want us to work with you, that's fine. And so we kind of came to that agreement. A few times we've been asked, like, we were asked, like, not saying certain hymns or not saying certain, like, words and stuff. And a lot of it really wasn't that big a deal. And most times we just kind of sing it anyway. And it's kind of one of the things that you get a slap on the wrist, but nobody really does anything. So there was a time on the first tour we did with Disney that we were starting to feel really kind of, I don't know, how do you explain that? Kind of empty inside. Like we weren't being able to interact with the fans as much as we hoped. And so we started to realize that our day-to-day ministry was becoming hanging out with the crew and living the way that we felt would be a kind of righteous. I don't know how to explain that.
It basically became a thing of, we had said for so long, like coming from playing in churches, like, we believe in God, we believe in this, we believe in this, and it's so much easier to say it than most times it is to live it, especially when we were in a world of people that honestly didn't care if you loved God or didn't, because they lived their life the way they wanted to, and it was by their own role, you know? And so we were like, okay, we really need to be living this, and it started to become a thing where we were like family with our crew, and they respected us. Like, they would stop swearing and stop, like, telling all their guy jokes or whatever that they would say, and they would come to us, like, individually and be like, we respect you girls because you don't run around preaching what you believe, but you live it, and that means more to us than you trying to just push it on us because you feel like you have to.
At the end of this tour that we were on, there was the stage manager came up to us, and he was one of those guys, he wasn't going to change his ways, he wasn't going to change his faith or, you know, his system of belief in his life, but he kept saying he respected us so much. And at the very end of the tour, he comes up to us with tears in his eyes, and he gave us all a hug. He's like, listen, you girls, you three are a lighthouse. I don't know what that means, but I feel like I'm supposed to tell you you're a lighthouse, and don't ever let your light go out, because what you're doing is changing people. And we were like, what? Oh, my God. Like, this whole time, we were just kind of like, what are we supposed to do on this tour? So that's like one of the biggest things in the last 2 years that it's kind of driven us to continue on.
Yeah, I was just going to say that could really sustain you. I mean, that's a hugely encouraging response from someone who, you know, you wouldn't normally expect it.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay, well, tell me a little bit. You guys just came out with an acoustic EP, actually, called At the Love Library, and then you have another album coming out, date still TBD, but you guys are working on that. Tell us a little bit, just give us a summary now of your sound and kind of some of the themes that you're speaking about in these albums.
Well, we released the EP because we were going to Europe. We just got back from a two-month tour there, and we wanted to have some new material for the fans, and then also we released it here. This is kind of like something to tie them over. It's like their appetizer before dinner. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you know, keep the interest going. And we wanted to title it At the Love Library because the studio was actually called The Love Library, but it was perfect because there was each song on that, like those four songs we have are about a different type of love. One's about community, one's about heartbreak, one's about finding our place, like walking with the Lord, and the other one is about being able to let go. And so all of those have kind of summed up where we're headed. We're going to basically thematically be talking about like a lot of heart issues, because it's the only place that we really start to connect with people, because we're constantly psychoanalyzing ourselves and trying to figure out how to become better and living our lives. And then I think sonically, we're kind of trying to make it a little more simple. We're just kind of stripping it down, like working with Disney, things are highly produced and very, you know, Disney.
Right, yeah.
Actually really, like, crazy and energetic and entertaining, because the kids get bored very quickly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So what we've done is we've kind of stripped away a bunch of the tracks that have been in our music and put a lot of raw elements into it, and we're mainly focusing on what we do best, and that's singing together. So that's a little bit of what to expect. We still have no idea, but hopefully it sounds like it.
That's great. So what do you have upcoming as far as any touring or any appearances?
Well, we're kind of trying to keep it a little bit low-key
for the summer.
For the summer. Mm-hmm. We normally would be out right now doing all the festivals. We're doing a couple this year. We have a show this weekend, and it's like pretty much on weekends we have shows. We probably aren't going to be going out on tour again until August.
Okay.
Which we're hoping going to the East Coast. And then we're going to be going back to Europe again at the beginning of the year. The response there was amazing. And it was one of the hardest tours that we've ever done because it was so different from anything we've ever experienced. Like, touring there is not a normal thing. Like, they, even down to the way the roads are set up, is not set up for touring. And the hotels and, like, it was just a crazy experience, but the response was
great,
amazing. Like, we haven't even released in a lot of the countries that we were at, and somehow the fans knew about it, and they told their friends, and there were, like, tons of kids at these shows that were being impacted. And that, to us, was incredible, because it was like, you're completely in a different country, and somehow our music has reached this. And so, I mean, that's definitely one of our main focuses for the beginning of the year, is to do more stuff there, and then hopefully have the next CD released by the end of the year, if not the beginning of the year. So
okay, and then we'll see more of you then, I'm sure. So
sure.
Well, definitely, we'll have folks keep up with you and follow you. You can do that, listeners, at everlifeonline.com. Also, you guys are on the social networking sites. You guys have MySpace and all of that, so folks can find you there. So we definitely want to keep an eye out. Just to recap, that acoustic EP is called At the Love Library, and then the new album, set to release hopefully later this year or into the front end of the next one. Now, you guys said, Ted Slater told me that you guys, have had a connection with Boundless. You found us. How did you hear about us, and what specifically has impacted you guys about the Ministry of Focus on the Family or Boundless, with just kind of where you are right now?
Well, honestly, this is Sarah. We were signed with Hollywood Records for a Disney affiliated label out of California for about 2 years, and we left the label in October of 2007. And mm-hmm. It was like a mutual thing, but we decided to be independent, not knowing at all what that entailed and how hard that was going to be.
Sure.
And so the girls and I each like figured out our own roles, and mine just happened to fall into the booking and like media category. And so I basically went online and I started researching any kind of online magazine or radio station or TV show or whatever, and like Boundless was one of the first ones that came up, and I started looking through it and I was like, this is actually like a ministry that helps people, which is awesome. It's not like all about you guys, it's about the people and how they're feeling and real issues, you know. And then when I like heard back from Ted, his email was so encouraging because he was like, I've actually been a fan of you guys for years, and I'd love to do an interview and all this kind of stuff. And I remember telling the girls,
because
this was a while ago, and I remember telling them, I was like, hey, this is really cool. Like, I emailed somebody and he already knew who we were.
And so, he's not even in Europe.
I know, right?
That's
awesome. But I think it's really cool when you find organizations that are actually about the people and about how they personally feel. Because, like, life is really a personal thing. Like, we're made for community. And when you have, like online magazines that it's about the community and about, like, the life situations that you're going through and
not necessarily still a 12-step program to
exactly
getting better and happy.
Yeah.
You know, actually dealing with things. So.
Yeah. Well, we love hearing about groups like you guys that are just out there, as you have already said in this interview, just really living out your faith and doing what you do well. And it's great that you can do it as three sisters and being really in the demographic of the folks who listen to us and who read us. And so it's kind of fun to be able to have that interaction and, you know, just slogging through everything related to relationships and careers and worldview. It's neat to be able to do it as a community and have you guys speak into that.
For sure. Yeah, we appreciate you guys taking the time.
Yeah. So, well, girls, I will let you get back to the studio, to your writing and producing and everything that's going to come and come about for the new album. That's very exciting. Hopefully, we'll be able to see you sometime here at Focus on the Family. You guys need to come out to Colorado and visit us.
We'd love fantastic.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So, but I know you have a little dog to care for, so you got to figure out one of you does, the little Pomeranian.
Yeah, they come on the road with us.
Oh,
yeah, they do.
Well, okay. Well, we'll slap some visitor badges on them here and let them come through focus. That'll be fun. So, all right. Well, you guys stay in touch. Again, everyone, find Everlife at everlifeonline.com. Check out their current album, the At the Love Library, and then the new one coming out. Make sure you follow them. And we'll be looking forward to finding some tour dates and some gigs as you guys head into the fall and into next year. So, like I said, stay in touch with us, and we want to hear more.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
I know you feel it like I do. You see this, we all do. It's burning like a fire taking over the night. Yeah, 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 yeah. You don't see it, but you can't deny it's there. It's electric. There's something in the air.
Today's inbox, we're going to take a little departure from where we've usually gone with the inbox and answering listener questions, and we're going to talk a little bit about The Girl's Guide to Marrying Well. And I have Ashley with me here in the studio. Hey, Ash.
Hey, Lisa.
Hello. I have Ashley here because she's been monitoring kind of some of the conversations on the blog. For those of you who read the blog, The Line, you know that they kind of threw the question out there for the women as to what would you like to see covered in The Girl's Guide to Marrying Well, which is actually a compilation of info from a bunch of people. We've had such success with the Guy's Guide. Guys, if you haven't gotten the Guy's Guide, go get it. Go to boundless.org. But obviously, we thought that there needed to be the female companion to that. So, Ashley, tell us a little bit about why we felt we had to do a Girl's Guide to Marrying Well.
Well, one reason why we felt we needed to do the Girl's Guide is because we were asked for the Girl's Guide. The Guy's Guide was such a hit. It was just so profound. It really was that the girl said, "Hey, where's our copy? Where's our
Girl's Guide?" Do they not realize they just need to sit around and look beautiful at this point? I mean, come on, ladies. There's not anything else we can do.
And I think the other part of that is we saw the Guy's Guide was a really helpful tool for guys to be able to gauge, am I ready to marry? What steps do I need to take to move toward being ready? And when I'm in a relationship, what is a biblical way to conduct this relationship to move toward marriage? And so the guys had all this information. And of course, all the girls were downloading the Guy's Guide and reading it too. I know I did. Mm-hmm. But if you were a guy and you sort of had a game plan, wouldn't you want the girl you were dating or that you were thinking about dating to have the same game plan? So in my mind, that's a reason why we need that complimentary guide so that guys and girls are on the same page about marrying well.
Okay. So we know, I mean, we've talked a lot to Candace on the show, and we know that she wrote her book, Get Married, which tells women, you know, really that we're supposed to do a number of things, including pray boldly. We're supposed to seek out mentors. We're supposed to get in community, have agency, those folks who know us well and know other folks well who can kind of match us up. How will this guide be different, and where's it gonna? What are some of the areas that it goes into? Talk to us a little bit about what women will find in the guide.
The way that this guide's going to be different is that it isn't just Candace's voice. Yes, there is the pray boldly message. There's the create agency, find mentors. You will hear that, and some of that will be directly from Candace. But there's also a compilation of just great boundless authors, great voices like Michael Lawrence, Scott Croft. There's Suzanne Hadley, Carolyn McCulley, just to name a few, John Thomas. I just could go on and on. And these are authors who week after week give great advice, great content. And so it provides a voice that some of our listeners may be more receptive to, that they might identify with. So it is different than the get married message in that way, that there's more than one voice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a little more comprehensive.
But those four pillars, when we've talked about the guy's guide here on the show, those four pillars are still reflected in the girl's guide. Talk to us about that.
They are. It's the same format. It's the Christian compatibility, community, purity, and intentionality. And it's some of the themes are overlapping in the girl's guide and the guy's guide, which they overlap in real life, so they should be there.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with Christian compatibility, there's this idea of the soulmate. You know, Gary Thomas talks about the danger of finding the one. That mm-hmm. danger is if we find the one, you know, when they start to cease meeting our expectations, we're going to panic and think, oh, this person isn't my soulmate. I need to go find my soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
So he covers that really well. There's the idea of settling. You know, Scott Croft talks about that in the guy's guide.
Mm.
And we did try to keep the guy's guide and the girl's guide as separate and as different as possible. But there were just some pieces that absolutely had to be included in both because they were outstanding pieces. And one of those is the settling article from Scott Croft.
Mm.
And I think it's essential for both the girl's guide and the guy's guide because so many people hear that message of don't settle. Wait for the person who absolutely completes you. And it's paralyzing
mm-hmm.
because we think, oh, well, this guy's great, but what if someone else might be better for me in this respect or et cetera, et cetera. There could be a dozen things. And so he really helps women to see that we have unrealistic expectations with this thought of, I don't want to settle. What if this isn't the perfect one for me? So, and we also have the pillars of intentionality, which is where we talk about living like you're planning to marry, what to do when he's not asking. Of course, we have Suzanne's piece of not your buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolyn McCulley ends our intentionality segment with her piece on being holy influencers, saying that instead of going with our natural sinful tendency as women to nag and whine and manipulate, that God has given us this opportunity through purity and reverence to trust God's ability to change men and to help them to become the men that God has made them to be. And then we have our segment on community where we talk about mentors, you know, Candace's favorite topic, mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is such an important segment because it's for the girl who is in a relationship and spurring her on toward, yes, you need to find a mentor couple, but it's also for the girl who's not yet in a relationship, finding a woman to mentor her as a single woman. And that's really what the whole guide is for. The guide is versatile. It's relevant to people who are single, people who are already in relationship. And on a personal note with the mentor segment, that was something that Brian and I failed to do early on in our relationship was to find a mentor couple. And we found that once we were engaged, we started hitting some bumps in the road that we would have been able to better navigate if we had found that mentor couple early on. And so we got a really late start on that. But even in the past couple months of finally having a mentor couple, having someone to bounce stuff off of, that it's really helped us to work through our problems, to not just kind of sit in our baggage. And yeah, I just want to say that. Read that segment. Take it to heart. And then our last segment, the purity segment, we have some great articles, you know, how to turn down the heat in a relationship so you can really see what's there, what's in your relationship beside all of this chemistry and attraction. And Suzanne, again, is in this segment. She has an article that recently was on Boundless. It's also in the Girl's Guide. It's Leaving the Edge. And she speaks about purity in a way that really resonates with women. She talks about the movies we watch, the thoughts we entertain. I found it compelling and convicting. So those are the four segments that we have in the Girl's Guide.
That's good. Okay. Yeah, I would say it's obviously, you know, a timely piece, especially given the fact that when the blog piece was written about it, we had all kinds of comments from women and some men in there of what they wanted to actually see in the guide. So you can probably find that there on the line, on Boundless Line, and check it out and make sure that you weigh in if you want to. And then when the guide is available, which we're looking at it being up and available pretty soon, so make sure you keep checking back for that. Then go ahead and read it and let us know what you think, because we want to hear from you on that. As we always do, write to us at editor@boundless.org. And you can go ahead and weigh in with your feedback and your questions, comments, and concerns. And we'll see. You know, we'll get these two guides under our belts, have people reading them, see what happens, and then you can start sharing your stories as well. So we will do that. And until we have our show next week, we'll be waiting to hear from you, and we'll be formulating more things that we want to talk about and discuss here on The Boundless Show. And until then, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Have a great week, everyone.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.